to the fourth episode of the QICAG podcast. I'm your host, April Dinwiddie, communications consultant for the QICAG. With the six key messages as a guide, this podcast will highlight the practical tools, materials, and content created by the QICAG and offer a deeper understanding of how it all can be useful for members of the child welfare community, as well as allied professionals and parents. Today, we welcome back Project Director Leslie Cohen, as well as Christina Schuma, Site Implementation Manager in Vermont. We're going to have a conversation about the importance of allocating resources to engage families in services and supports. Today, we're going to begin our conversation with Leslie. I'm so glad you're back with us today.
Happy to be back, April.
So before we welcome Christina to talk about the work in Vermont, I wanted you to help us frame this message and the idea of allocating resources to engage families in services and supports. What does that actually mean?
That's a great question. On previous podcasts, we actually discussed that as professionals, we have the responsibility to meet the needs of families and children, not just prior to finalization, but also long after permanence has been achieved. This is true now more than ever because we have a much better understanding of the impact of the child's experiences while in foster care, the impact of trauma, the impact of separation and loss, and how that really impacts a child and family's journey even after permanence has been achieved.
This all sounds so important, Leslie. What else?
So to that end, it's really important for child welfare systems to link families to services prior to the attainment of permanence and to continue to offer those supports and services after permanence has been achieved. And we can foster that by investing in what we call universal services that can facilitate ongoing support and connections with families. And these universal strategies are typically light touches designed to keep families feeling connected, to keep them feeling supported and engaged, to inform them of services and supports that can be accessed when the family actually identifies an immediate need for services.
All right, so this makes so much sense, right? And with all of this in mind, how did some of the QICAG sites focus on this particular aspect of the work?
We had eight sites, and there were definitely a lot of aha moments where teams would be inspired to consider new ways of engaging and communicating with families. But there were also times when teams had actually been thinking about something and their work with the QICAG, they're thinking about how they could support families both before and after permanence was reinforced by what they were doing through this particular project.
That's so great, Leslie. Can you give us a little bit more of an example here?
For instance, in the state of Tennessee, they were motivated to implement a mandatory adoption preparation training that was done for families before finalization. And it was something they'd already been considering. And what was so cool is that the agencies that they were considering having do the preparation training was actually the agency that was providing their ASAP services, their post-permanency services. So what was so great about them putting this into place, besides the obvious preparation that families were getting, was that the families were actually beginning to build relationships during that pre-training that could carry over in the event that the family needed support post-permanency, post-adoption finalization, or post-guardianship finalization.
So not only did the Tennessee team implement the innovative intervention, the neurosequential model of therapeutics, but they were also inspired to fully activate and engage families in the adoption preparation training that included information about services available post-finalization. So that gets me thinking that this proactive approach would help parents realize, one, that they may need services as their journey unfolds, two, that those services would be there when they need them, and three, the all-important relationship would already be in place where the family would feel comfortable with these trusted professionals. So I love that. I'm so glad that we, you know, are putting a sharper point on this. So I wonder if you actually have an example that helps further illustrate the benefits for families when resources and relationships come together.
Yeah, there are countless examples, but I'd love to share one with you from Tennessee. There were parents caring for two boys that had actually completed the adoption and guardianship preparation training. And as part of that, they felt like they reported that they had learned, a ton of information about brain development. And as they were in class, they realized that they needed a little bit more sort of personal help and asked that they be referred for some pre-adoption in-home counseling.
So as a result of this in-home counseling, Leslie, what were some of the things that had come up?
One of the things that they recognized at the time was that although they were on board with moving forward with the adoption, other family members, extended family members who were really part of their support system weren't quite on the same page. And they thought that counseling could help them work through some of those issues. And as they sort of delved further into counseling, the mom actually realized that she had some issues that were causing her to struggle with attachment with one of the children due to her own trauma history and some issues related to abandonment.
Leslie, this is a really powerful example. So what happened to the family? Where are they now? How are they doing?
The family proceeded with counseling, and ultimately they proceeded with finalizing the adoption. And once the adoption was complete, they were able to continue that counseling with the same staff members, with folks that they had already established a relationship with. And they were also able to receive other support as needed from that same group of professionals. And in fact, one of the things that they loved to do was going to the ASAP family camp, which they would tell you was like their best vacation to date, but more seriously really provided them with some ongoing support with a little bit of respite that was needed to keep their family, going and functioning well.
Well, I'm nodding and I'm smiling because that example is really one that shows the importance of having the services available and that there's a relationship in place. So that family on their journey and as it unfolds has the comfort level for services. And so it's a great example. I'm so glad you were able to share it. So thank you for that.
Oh, of course. I'm glad that we were able to give a little bit more detail and talk about how all of these elements really come together in support of families.
Well, it's actually a perfect setup for our conversation with Christina in Vermont. So I want to thank you so much for coming back and talking with us today, Leslie. And we're going to bring in Christina to talk with us a little bit more about what was going on in Vermont.
Thanks so much for having me, April.
And with that, we're going to welcome Christina Schuma, Site Implementation Manager in Vermont, to the podcast. We are so glad you could be with us today, Christina.
Thanks, April. I'm really excited to be here today. Thank you.
So Leslie and I have been talking about how the work of the QICAG made a way for even more practical and proactive, meaningful parent outreach and engagement. Before we get into that detail, could you please tell us a little bit about the intervention that you implemented in Vermont?
Absolutely. In Vermont, our intervention was a permanency survey, and that was designed to identify family strengths and protective factors. The survey gathered data about family characteristics, including child, family, and caregiver well-being, along with what were the respondents' beliefs around permanence and service needs in the state of Vermont, and also the youth's sense of belonging and integration within their own communities. Ultimately, the survey helped to determine the needs, risks, and strengths of families post-permanence with the goal of enhancing and providing timely, relevant services and supports to those families.
So it seems like such a basic idea to ask families and youth how they're doing and make those authentic connections with them so they feel heard and understood and at the same time gain valuable knowledge and insights to better serve them.
You're absolutely right. We have to start thinking about proactive outreach and parent engagement as necessary elements of planning and also essential in creating relationships ongoing. Our work in Vermont really did focus on making sure that we were creating a space for dialogue and connecting to families at critical points along their child's development on an ongoing basis. And to do this, we needed to know more and we needed to ask a lot more questions. And therefore, we developed and disseminated the survey to learn about those experiences of families both pre and post-permanence.
Christina, I know for a fact, based on some of the time I've spent in Vermont, that you're really committed to this for families. So can you tell me a little bit more about the approach here?
As a way to connect with families, learn from them, and give them an opportunity to ask for help, we conducted an in-depth analysis of the adoptive and guardianship families in our state. We wanted to understand the landscape of services available and how well families could actually really connect to those services, and also identify the strengths of families who reported that they were doing well. But it would also be able to spot signals of those families that might be at risk of discontinuity episodes. Only when we knew more could we actually really determine the best way to engage with families over the course of time.
While we don't have time on this podcast today to talk in great detail about all that you learned, we'd love to understand how the survey ultimately helped to build capacity and encourage parent engagement more broadly.
Sure thing. We learned so much from this survey, and we're so excited to actually use the information that we gained from this survey in our ongoing efforts with families. So from disseminating the survey and collecting some of this really valuable information, it really did allow us to establish a connection with families and also to reconnect with those families that we may have lost connections to. We were able to respond to some families' most immediate needs. If they thought of something that they had a question about that was triggered from this survey, we were actually able to connect with them and offer them answers and support and possibly services.
All such important elements. What else, Christina?
It also provided a basis for the creation of a system to track families as they left the system of care so that anticipatory guidance could be sent to them after that permanency has been achieved. It also allowed us to consider other changes in practice before permanency is achieved to make sure that our families are better prepared and also remain connected after they've left the system of care. Ultimately, the survey really did allow us to build capacity with the development of this database system. It allowed us to have more information to train staff, and it also informed changes for the ongoing offerings that we are putting forth to families.
What a great example of knowledge is power. Thank you for that. It makes so much sense that knowing more would allow for more thoughtful parent engagement from the very beginning of the process and all the way through. Opening up this critical conversation and connection to supports and services that may be needed post-finalization, because as we know, adoption is a lifelong journey.
Yes, absolutely. We finally had the voices from families from across the state telling us what they needed.
So with all that, Christina, what did you do?
This allowed us to advocate for training offerings to community providers, while also letting us personalize our training for and outreach to families. And again, it established that important bridge and connection with families. I'd also really love to share, if possible, as a result of this survey, how we as the professionals in the state of Vermont went about allocating some additional resources in order to engage families.
Oh, absolutely, Christina. We'd love to hear. Fire away.
Our team of adoption and guardianship professionals in Vermont designed a booklet. We titled it The Continuing Journey of Children and Families, an informational guide for families parenting by adoption or guardianship. And this guide was really designed to raise awareness for families joined by adoption and guardianship to support their understanding of youth development based on the core issues in adoption and through the lens of trauma.
This guide sounds like such an important tool and a practical resource for families experiencing adoption, offering them just the right touch to inform and also encourage them to maintain connections to DCF, reminding them that they can ask for help and that they can get it when they need it.
Yes, families stated that they found that this guide was really helpful to giving them some information earlier on to better understand what they might be expecting in the future.
Well, Christina, I think for anyone listening that might have been thinking a survey, like how can that be engaging? There you have it. Christina, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts today. And thank you again to Leslie for being part of this wonderful conversation.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, April.
After we recorded, Christina shared a bit more about how the process of administering the initial survey motivated a systematic change, inspiring the team to allocate resources and create an ongoing system of data collection and analytics to guide the outreach to families. This example of collecting and tracking data of family experiences post-permanence, knowing what to anticipate, and using it all as a bridge to continue to implement thoughtful outreach and engagement strategies truly drives our message home. When we allocate resources to engage families in this way, we are truly supporting and helping them to be fully informed and welcomed to utilize and access the services that they may need. The QICAG is funded through the Department of Health and Human Services, Administration for Children and Families, Children's Bureau, grant number 90CO1122-01-00. The contents of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the funders, nor does the mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This information is in the public domain.